If you would, turn in your Bibles to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 6. Verse 12 is where we've stalled. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, powers, world forces of this darkness. Please note, the English loses what Paul really is saying. You get the essence, but we are losing much of Paul's emphasis. Paul immediately rules out the Christian struggle as not against human powers and forces. It sure looks like it, wouldn't it? You think of all of the suffering of the church throughout the centuries, and you can point to human forces. We played that movie in Sunday school, those precious Hispanics losing their lives for their faith in Jesus Christ. It sure looks like it's human. Paul says, not. Not is the first word of that sentence. That's the Greek's way of saying immediately discount, reject, that really it's anything human. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood. That means we face a hidden, unseen enemy. Hidden, unseen. I want everybody to get as quiet as we can. Did you hear it? It was tremendous. Probably deafening. You didn't hear it, did you? The Bible tells us that there has been a war in heaven for an unknown period of time. I remember in history class the 30 years war in Europe, the 100 years war in Europe. What Christians are completely unaware of is a long war has been going on. You can't hear it. You can't see it. But it involves God's forces against the forces of Lucifer. I know my dad blamed loss of hearing in one of his ears because of the shelling during World War II. Did you hear any shelling, Ralph? No shelling? Anybody in World War II besides Ralph? You're dead. War is noisy, horrible, shattering. But this morning we've got to talk about a war that's gone on long before we got here, that is very mysterious. We only get glimpses of it. It's a war between God's forces of light and Lucifer's forces of darkness that Christians are completely unaware of. Back in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, the Bible tells us that sometime before time began, Lucifer, a created angel, at least we think he was an angel, was the height of God's creation, the most beautiful, powerful, being that God had ever created, and Lucifer, Satan, the devil, rebelled against God. There was war in heaven. Have you ever looked up that phrase, war in heaven? Boy, that's an interesting phrase. But long before we got here, before there was time itself, there was a rebellion in an unseen realm. You can't see it. You can't hear it. You often think of heaven as a place where it's all peaceful. Little do we realize that right now, if we could see, there would be a hidden unseen realm of the most violent, horrific war you would have ever been witness to. What must war in heaven be like? Somewhere in time past, the devil dragged a third of God's angels with him, thinking he could be more powerful than God. And all the evil in the world you see, behind it is a Luciferian struggle against God, seeking to drag humanity down with him. Not only does Lucifer want to take the angels with him, but when you see everything you see in this world of the evil, the death, the destruction, the wars of all of this since the fall in the Garden of Eden, we're only getting the eensiest, weensiest little bit of the real battle that is going on. But I asked you, could you hear it? The most violent, powerful war you've ever seen. The thing that amazes me is if God is omnipotent, which he is, he could end this battle by just merely thinking Lucifer out of existence with his angels. But for some reason that we do not know, God has permitted this. There is a war ongoing right now. Behind every violent, destructive force on earth and everywhere else is the influence and unseen power of the forces of God and the forces of Satan engaged in a cosmic battle. You don't see it. You don't hear it. And by the way, it affects us. There's not much we can do about it. But because we don't see it, we don't really pay attention to it. We can't hear it, see it, feel it. Must not exist. Oh, you ought to see what the Bible says about this. The Bible says about this in Revelation. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. By the way, the devil, the name Lucifer, comes from the Latin. He's not called Lucifer in the Hebrew. He's called Satan, adversary. Lucifer comes from the Latin, and it's a mistranslation. There's nothing about Satan that has light. He's darkness. He's called Satan, the adversary, the devil, who constantly wars against God. All of the wickedness we see at the highest elite areas of the control of humanity rests a fallen force network of demonic force that we're facing. When Jesus came, he actually established a beachhead through his death on the cross, just like D-Day, God employing his forces against those of Satan. And yet, the thing that still mystifies me is, if God wanted to, he could think it out of existence with no problem. Right now, as we are here, if you had a special pair of glasses, and very few are privileged to see it, you would see God's forces engaging the devil's forces and battling. As a matter of fact, when Moses died, Jude says this in Jude, verse 9, that Michael, a very powerful angel, had to contend with the devil over the body of Moses. You didn't know that, did you? Even the body of Moses, who led the people out of Egypt, there was war even over that. What did that entail, Pastor Dave? I have no idea. God doesn't tell us much. I want to know a lot more. But we get glimpses of it. When God's people suffer, when God's plan and program appear to have reversals, when Christianity is now the most persecuted religion in the world, you can bet that it's not merely ISIS and the insane people of the Middle East. They're insane because behind it, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. You can't hear it. I want to tell you that again. You can't see it. There's a battle for every soul that turns to Jesus Christ. Every soul. Everything. When you walk outside and you look up and you see the beautiful Memorial Day quietness and the nice weather we have, if you could rip aside what you see and look behind the curtain, you would see nothing but horrific warfare for what's going on. I want to show you a picture of this. A picture of something that is profound. In many ways, I don't know what to think of it. Nonetheless, it exists. And you need to turn to the book of Joshua. Let me give you a brief background. At the end of Deuteronomy, Moses dies. It's taken the children out of Egypt 40 years to get to the promised land. Why? They disobeyed God. And God made them, because of their unbelief, march in a circle for 38 and a half years. By the way, behind that, you'd see spiritual forces trying to defeat the people of God. And they apparently were successful, because we'll find out in Acts that Stephen and Amos said that in the midst of the people out of Egypt were Luciferian idolaters. Ooh, did you hear what I said? You didn't know that, did you? That out of the people that came out of Egypt, there was a small, strong group of idol-worshipping Luciferians. I'm going to prove it to you. If you think I don't know what I'm talking about, and Pastor Dave, you've got quite an imagination, then you don't know what Scripture says. For the Bible, and that's why Stephen got stoned, by the way, and I don't mean by taking alcohol or drugs. Stephen told him, "It wasn't to me, O Israel, that you came out of Egypt and worshiped me. For 40 years you worshiped your idols and the star of your god, Moloch." There was, coming out of Egypt, an unsanctified portion of them. And God had to deal with that. Finally, they've come, and we'll tell you more in Acts. They've come. Moses is dead. The body of Moses, there was a war over even where Moses was buried in Jude. Joshua, one of the two spies that gave a good report. There are all these giants in the land. And by the way, you don't know this, but they've discovered bones of giant people. That's another story for another day that you have no idea. Much of our history has been hidden. And Joshua and the children are getting ready. God has said there is immense evil in Palestine, although that probably wasn't the name of it at that time. I want my people who worship me to go in and wipe out the evil that is there. Now you have to understand, I don't like to hear these stories because when the nation went in, they had to wipe out a whole bunch of people. Not only people, but even animals. And I remember, for those of you who remember Valerie, you used to struggle with that, huh? Cheryl, Valerie used to struggle. I don't get it. And there's part of me that doesn't understand it either because I want to see everybody be okay. But God had to have his people march in and do a cleansing action of the horrific evil of the cultures that were there. This is to make a small area of the world safe for the Messiah to come. Now, on the human level, it's Joshua and the Israelite forces. They're going to go in. And they have to obey God, and I am so thankful I wasn't an Israelite soldier in that day, for they had to wipe out thousands. By the way, just to let you know, these people there were quite debased, wicked. They would offer their children in sacrifice. They'd take their children in front of a god with horns, babies and little children, and they would literally cast their children into the fire and hear them scream in agony of burning, because their Luciferian demons demanded these kind of sacrifices. Paul tells us that behind this kind of thing is our demons. I hear that still goes on today. For some of you who have told you to listen to some people, it's interesting, but there is a very wicked action that is demonically empowered. And God had to send his people in and take this out because these people were so debased, there was no human way. They had to be removed. So in chapter 1 of Joshua, Joshua takes command. God says to him, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Arise, cross the Jordan. I'm giving you this land. However, no man," verse 5 of chapter 1, "will be able to stand before you. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. Take it. Be courageous. Don't be afraid. And by the way, these guys were facing physical giants. These skeletal remains have been discovered. That's another day and another story. So God tells them on the human level, you have to go to war. Then Joshua in verse 10 commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the midst of the camp, prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days we cross the Jordan. And that wasn't for a vacation on the coast. That was for war. To possess the land. And we're going to be fighting until the Lord, verse 15, gives us rest. So they send in spies in chapter 2. And they discover Rahab. She was a prostitute. I find it interesting that the Israelite spies went into a place undercover to a brothel. No one would detect them there. And there was Rahab. By the way, Rahab was a prostitute, and the only thing she had going for her was she protected the spies, and because of that act of faith, God said, I'll account it to her for righteousness because she believed and protected the spies. And so Rahab showed the men. And they begin in chapter 3 to cross the Jordan. Early in the morning, 3:1, they arose early in the morning, and all the sons of Israel set out from Shittim and came to the Jordan, and they lodged there before they crossed. And it came about at the end of 3 days, the officers, the soldiers, the generals went through the midst of the camp. They commanded the people, take the Ark of the Covenant and let the Ark of the Covenant and the Levitical priests set out first. By the way, the ark was not a magical box. It was merely the symbol of God's presence to his people. It was mere box. But it's a symbol that God would go before his people. But how? How would God go before his people? Would you send in, for you who are in the military, would you send your chaplains first with a Bible up front before you started war? Interesting. Consecrate yourselves, verse 5. And when the people set out from their tents in verse 14 to cross the Jordan with the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, and when those who carried the Ark came into the Jordan and the feet of the priests carrying the Ark were dipped in the edge of the water, that the waters which were flowing down from above stood and rose up. How many separations of water were there? It wasn't only the Red Sea, it was here. And the priests, verse 17, who carried the ark, stood on dry ground. Now it came about when all the nation had finished crossing, that the Lord said, take 12 men from each tribe and build a monument. So they did. They had about, in verse 13, 40,000 men equipped for war. And they got ready for battle. Chapter 5. Sure looks like they're facing a huge force to take out Jericho. They're getting ready for war. Their swords are at their side. They have prepared their bows and arrows, whatever things they can get. And they get spiritually ready in chapter 5. And on that day, I find it interesting, on that day that they crossed the Jordan, guess what stopped? The manna. God had fed those people for 40 plus years, and the moment they turned to get ready for battle, The moment they stepped into the Jordan, there was no more manna. Why? Because God was going to let them eat off the bounty of the land that they were about to take. Look at verse 12 of chapter 5. And the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten some of the produce of the land. So the sons of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate some of the yield of the land of Canaan. All right, up to now, you are seeing barbarism of war. Men are about to face the enemy. They're about to go in to an area that had long been held in paganism, in wickedness of sacrificing children to Lucifer, in the midst of all sorts of idolatry that would cause us to blush. But there's an interesting story. Because one does not win such a battle on the basis of being equipped with swords of metal and tactics of war by humans. For look what it says in verse 13. As a good general, in verse 13 of chapter 5, Joshua walks the ship at night. A good captain of his ship, a good general will get up in old days and reconnoiter. Take a look around as to what the men will face at dawn. And it says in verse 13 of chapter 5, now it came about, Joshua was right near Jericho. By the way, Jericho would have high walls. They'd pour down all sorts of hot oil and stuff on these people. War was terrible. When you killed somebody, you got up close and personal. So he walks the ship. And then he's given the privilege of seeing something that very few have been given to see, which if God ever gives you the privilege, pay attention. For if you could, you would see this very same thing if God would open your eyes to see this. He walks the ship, sees where they're going to go in, makes sure they're ready. And as he walks that ship, he lifted up his eyes and looked, verse 13, and a man was standing opposite him. Now, it says a man. It looked like a man. It was clearly looked human, but it wasn't. For remember, we've shown you that angels and these spiritual forces can come down and take human form and even cohabit with human women. You want bizarre? We wrestle not against flesh and blood. With sword drawn in his hand. Now, what would you think if you were the general? You clearly know whatever this guy was, he sure didn't look like an Israeli. He didn't look like one of the soldiers that Joshua was commanding, and he's got a sword like this in his hand. And I like Joshua's courage. And Joshua went over to him and said, are you for us or our adversaries? That takes a lot of guts, because Joshua, as a soldier, was going to take him out. He didn't know who this guy... By the way, he didn't look like the Israelites, and he sure didn't look like those in Jericho. Who was this individual? And yet, he was a soldier, and he had a sword. You talk about something that's weird? Look what he says. And he said, no, I indeed now have come as captain of the armies of the Lord. Now get what this is saying. Joshua could have taken his tens of thousands of men, gone into Jericho, and it wouldn't have mattered the Jerichoites, here's what this is saying. Before Joshua could go in and have success on the human level with his troops, God had to dislodge the Luciferian forces that were controlling these idolatrous people. Think about that. God had to go in, and this angel showed himself to give Joshua a lesson, not by might nor by power, but what? So whatever controlled these idolatrous people that were sacrificing their children to demons, everything else, before Joshua could have any success on the human level, God was sending in his own troops. And there was going to be, are you ready for this? War in heaven, in that area. That's why I believe, as weird as this sounds, and you know you think Pastor Dave's weird, I honestly believe there are territorial spirits. I honestly believe they're very strong in Southern California because of so much evil that goes on in Southern California. I believe if we could see, you would see horrific forces of Lucifer, Satan, the adversary, huge, powerful beings enslaving every person they can that does not know Jesus Christ, and you would see God's forces going in and hacking away at the areas that they control. And believe me, there are times when I've gone into places like Hollywood that I have literally called me weird. But I have literally felt something's wrong. The evil, the power. This is telling us that Joshua would not have had success on the human level unless God had sent this. Many think this was a theophany, by the way, that this is God. No. This is, God has troops. God has soldiers that are angels. I don't know if the sword that the angel was carrying was real, probably, but do they use real metal swords when they war in heaven? I don't think so. I don't know what the weapons they use when this starts engaging. But they're far beyond, the sword merely was to tell Joshua, I'm about to fight with my hosts, and you will not have success until we go in. Every time then, that may imply that every time God's forces win something, the church benefits. Every time the devil's forces win and God allows it in this battle, you see Christians suffering in this world. You see them put in cages by ISIS. You can bet that God's forces have engaged. And as much as this sounds weird, God is omnipotent, but let them get pulled back. And when Christians die and are suffering, it's because in this spiritual realm, God's people, God's forces are tangling with this and they're not winning. Dave, why does God allow his forces to lose? I don't know. Everything in terms of evil is not human. The humans are merely secondary to the primary force of these invisible, unseen, Luciferian forces that are engaging war in heaven with God. Tell me more, Dave. I don't know. I got one more story and then we're leaving Ephesians. Explain this to me, Dave. I can't. I can only tell you that God had to let Joshua know, don't get cocky, kid. before your forces go in to remove the evil, my angels had to go in to engage Lucifer. So that tells you one thing. Wherever there is evil, Satan's forces are there in control. That means, I'll be honest with you, I think you'd see a horrific, horrific army of Luciferian angels in Washington. In other places, what goes on behind the scenes that you and I don't know about? In terms of the humanity and the evilness of people. Ireland just voted in, we want abortion. A woman's right to choose to kill her child. They don't put the killer child. I can bet you that in Ireland, Luciferian forces are winning right now. You don't see it. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. 58 million children aborted in America was an offering to Lucifer by Lucifer's forces. And the humans who are in league with them, whether they know it or not. But God's people are totally ignorant of this because it's a strange story. I sit there and just shake my head going, I can't figure all of this out. Why did Israel have victory against Jericho? Why did the walls fall down? Because God's forces went in first. And God enabled them to have victory. There has been a war in heaven since Lucifer, Satan, the adversary, rebelled, and all of the destruction and war in the 20th century alone. 60 million in Russia died. More than that in China over the communist revolutions. You can bet that behind that was a spiritual war. What can we do about it, Pastor Dave? I don't know. Well, we need to be aware of it because God gives us glimpses of it. Paul's going to tell us what to do when we finally finish up in this Ephesians. But we need to put on spiritual warfare. But to be honest with you, besides being prayed up, fessed up, and aware of it, I don't know how much we can really do. And until Jesus Christ returns and destroys this system, and I can see the way this system is going in the world, that it will take Jesus Christ intervening in this world. Amazon, if you have one of those Alexa or those Amazon devices, they spy on you, they listen to you, they're drawing in a new world order, an Orwellian government, and Christians aren't going into it, and it will only be Jesus Christ who will intercede from outside with his forces. What's going to stop this? And the only thing the angel does is tell him this. Joshua fell on his face, bowed down, and Joshua said, "What do you command me?" And the angel said, "Take off your shoes, God is present." That's why they took off their shoes. The angel wasn't God, but he was telling them this. In order for you to win, God, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of Sabaoth, had to go in with his forces and fight to defeat the demons that held those wicked people in bondage. As quiet as this church is, and you don't hear anything, and the sun is shining, you can bet that if God allowed you and could see behind the physical veil, you would see some of the worst fighting that you have ever witnessed or will ever witness. As there is war in heaven, And for God's people to have any sense of victory, God has to send in His troops first before we can have victory in this physical realm. Go figure that one.